You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Prepare to feel the wrath of the League of Evil Axes.
League of Evil Axes?
You really don't know about the League?
The seven evil exes coming to kill you, controlling the future of Ramona's love life?
No.
Oh, well, hey, listen, man, don't worry about it.
Really?
Yeah, let's go get a beer.
It's great. Boom!
Boom!
You are a pretty good actor.
I'm going for the Oscar this year.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
Wolfman's got nards!
Love
in the hammock.
What? Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 128 for the 16th of April, 2011. I am Dave McVeigh, and I am joined in studio by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm fantastic. I can't lie. It's been a good day. Good morning. Yeah.
Bit messy, but a good bit morning.
I do like my hair.
If you want to know what we're talking about, just go listen to Geek Actually, the first show.
That show was bizarre. we couldn't get things together.
All right, so this
hilarious.
This is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of Geek Actually Network. This goes out live every Saturday. We're going out at about 2:15 today. It normally goes out anytime between 1:30 and 2:00, but we're running a little late behind today. And you can watch this live at geekactually.com/live. So all times are in Australian Eastern Standard Time, UTC plus 10. Now, this week we are going to be reviewing the new comedy, Paul. We're going to take a little look at film news, and we deliver a brand new list of five. This week we're going to be doing five films best viewed under the influence, and we'll let you determine what that influence might be. All right, so we here at Film Actually do not encourage the partaking of illicit drugs, but, you know, sometimes films are best
unless
viewed that way.
Really fun.
Unless it's really fun. All right, but first, before we do that, we have a little bit of feedback. And every week we're getting pounded by feedback. And so if you don't listen to the Geek Actually show, you only listen to this one, you haven't heard our little disclaimer. So we'll throw it out here real quick, which is, if you are going to send us feedback, and we love all feedback, please keep the feedback coming. But, and feedback goes at feedback@geekactually.com is our email address. And I'll put that up on screen just so people who are watching live can see it. But please do me a favor. In the subject line, just put the name of the show that it's for. Because this week we had a couple of emails that were...
That first show, we were just trying to... We were like going through and going, no.
It's like,
no.
Which show does this one go for? I'm not sure. So yes, please do me a favor and just list which show it's for. That way we can make sure it gets routed to the right show. Now... Our first feedback up this week is from our good friend Mike from Canada, who writes to us just about every week, and I love him. And he writes and says, "The Jossables have risen and bring forth the following Joshisms. Go take your 10-year-old eyes and go sit down on your couch and watch your movies. I don't give a shit." I'd just like to point out, when I was reading this to Josh before the show, he actually has no memory of even saying some of these things. So these are from last week's show. What we are going to do, we'll finish this first and then I'll tell you what we're going to do. He has another one here. He says, "I think we might need a private screening of this because I'm going to make a mess."
That one I remember.
And the next one I love is, he says, "Fuck it, I'll watch it." Love that.
That's a definite Joshism right there.
So go forth and spread the word, and the word is actually four words. Spread the words, the Book of Josh. Okay? He goes on to say, "Hi, Josh, and then Dave."
Every time.
I love that. "Just listen to the last show. Absolute gold. Best episode ever. Thank you. Pat ourselves on the back. Congratulations. I'm glad it was a private screening because I did make a mess. I was baking cookies." Now, I don't know if that's a euphemism or you're actually making cookies.
I hope he was just baking cookies.
Yeah, me too. "I think you guys forgot Masters of the Universe's post-credit scene where Skeletor pops out of the water at the end and says, 'I'll be back.' Classic. I actually didn't forget about it. It just didn't make my list." Hey, another idea for a list of five. Five great villains in terrible movies. I love this idea, and we are banking this one. We've got a couple banked up that we're going to come to. We got to find the right movies for the right lists. Mm-hmm. So that's what it really comes down to. Okay, so we'll keep that one in mind. Definitely, he says, "This is my entry for the week." Now, I got very confused here, so just bear with me. He says, "I would like to say 1966 Harper is great, and my answer for this week's contest, best phone conversation on film. Paul Newman is fantastic, and the scene where he calls his ex-wife is so funny, Two Drops of Pee came out." Now, our chat room at the moment, I'm sure, is going, "What competition? What did I miss? I want to enter a competition." He then goes on to say, "Sorry, I figured it wouldn't be a film actually show without me getting disqualified." So I love the fact that he made up his own competition. This is fabulous. Love you guys too. Keep doing what you're doing, Mike from Canada. Mike, you are gold. Keep them coming. All right. Now, this was a link that was sent to us from Zed in our chat room. And I think this is glorious. It's from theregister.co.uk. And basically, it says in this article, and this link will be in our show notes so you can read the whole article, that a group of people want to send M. Night Shyamalan back to film school.
Are they going to pay for him?
No, apparently it costs $150,000 to send him back to NYU Film School. And they think that if they can get donations of each person, 150,000 people donating a dollar each, we might be able to send M. Night Shyamalan back to film school.
Do you think he would
accept? I don't think he would accept somehow. But so they're going to have a fundraising drive to try and raise it. The current total is a tad under $500 that they've raised so far. So
there you go.
I think that's fabulous. Let's send M. Night Shyamalan back to film school.
I totally agree with this concept.
So thank you, Zed, for that one. And what else do we have? Oh, yes. This one was actually quite good. Now, I didn't put this into the show notes. Yes, I did. Here it is. This is also from Mike. He sent this article through from slate.com, which I think is just glorious. This is the rules of slasher movie body counts. They've done some math. This is at, as I say, this is at slate.com. They've done some math, and I'll read straight from this article because it's actually pretty fascinating. It says, "The slasher flick will take yet another stab at the Cineplex next week when Scream 4, the latest installment of the 15-year-old franchise, hits theaters. As any fan of the series knows, slashers, that 70s-born genre about sociopaths wielding pointy objects and punishing teen fornicators, follow a particular well-honed set of rules."
That's right. Yeah.
"The killer is usually male, coitus is usually interruptus, and only the virginal final girl, quote-unquote, will survive. No. The formulaic nature extends to sequels as well. As a series resident film scholar Randy noted the second time round, there are certain rules that one must abide in order to create a successful sequel. No. Rule number one, the body count is always bigger." Is that really true, is what this article is positing.
Yeah. Okay.
And he said they decided to examine the relevant data. Here's a chart. There is a whole chart that goes with this. And graphing the body counts of slasher films by franchise and year of release. Okay. They came up with a mathematical equation. B equals 2N plus 12, open brackets, Z minus R, close brackets, plus 2C plus 2.5 plus 3.
Right.
B equals approximate on-screen body count.
Right.
N equals the number of installment in the series.
Mm-hmm.
Z equals zombie factor, i.e. is the film directed by a rock and schlock amateur Rob Zombie. One for yes, zero for no.
Right.
C is the number of colons in the title. and S, does the film take place in outer space? One for yes, zero for no. Okay, so this is the call. And here are some examples of the equation in action. Seeds of Chucky is the fifth and so far final Child's Play film, giving it an N of 5. It's neither a reboot, a film directed by Rob Zombie, an installment with colons in the title, nor a chapter in outer space.
Right.
So Seed's body count, 2, multiplied by 5 plus 3, is correctly predicted to be 13. They actually got the body count right.
Wow.
All right. Jason X is the 10th Friday the 13th film, though the filmmakers insist that the X does not stand for 10. It also takes place in space. 2 multiplied by 10 plus 2 multiplied by 1 plus 3 equals 25. And while space, Jason's personal kill is only 22, 25 people die in the film.
Wow, that's creepy.
Is that not hot?
That's awesome.
And you can actually go through and do this calculation and work this out on your own. Read the article. The full article is fantastic. We'll do one more and say Halloween 2007.
Right.
Is the 9th Halloween film, so right. N equals 9. Yeah. It's a reboot directed by Rob Zombie, so Z and R cancel each other out. C and S are 0, so the film's predicted body count is 2, multiplied by 9 plus 12, multiplied by 1 minus 1 plus 3, mathematical equation, or 21 is the answer. Yeah. Michael Myers notches 18 kills in the theatrical release. There are 20 casualties total in the theatrical cut, and there are 22 in the unrated cut. So a predicted 21 ain't bad.
It's not perfect, but it's still very good.
It's pretty close. It's pretty close. So you can shoot over to slate.com and actually have a read of this full article, and they have a few more examples. I think it's fabulous. I think, boy, it does say one thing to me, though, which is people really have too much free time. Yep.
No, those are just math students that have got nothing to do between classes.
So, and IMR Space in the chat room is saying, that is so cool.
Yeah.
I would love to go through and actually try this with some other examples and see if it actually does hold water.
Well, maybe we'll sit down and do a couple over the next few weeks and we'll see whether or not it still holds up.
Now, Zed sent us, to be controversial, and I don't want to get into a big thing about this because really we did it to death and I don't really want to get into it anymore.
Yeah.
But Zed did send us a very long email. I just wanted to give him recognition that we did get the email. Mm. Basically, his opinions on Sucker Punch, and he disagreed with us completely. And he went on and gave his points on why he disagreed with us. Some I agreed with, some I didn't. In fact, I would actually have to say most I didn't, but there was actually a couple that were agreed on. And I will say that the bottom line of all this, so Josh and I both had a talk about it, we basically said, it is a completely subjective thing. Mm. Film is a completely subjective thing. And that's one of the things we love about film. Is it so subjective?
Yeah.
And everybody has an opinion on what they like and what they don't like. As we read on an email about 6 months ago, some guy really didn't get Scott Pilgrim. And by the way, that opening clip was from Scott Pilgrim. And we love Scott Pilgrim. And that's perfectly valid as well. And everybody is entitled to their own opinion. If you enjoy Sucker Punch, by all means, power on. Go enjoy Sucker Punch. Yeah. We didn't. We thought it had a few problems, to be kind. It does kind of make me dread Superman. But we'll come back to that. We got some Superman news coming up. Because, of course, we have Superman news coming up. What else is there to talk about in this world? But before we do any of that, let's get on to this feature film review. I am a little disappointed. I was speaking to Charlie Gonzalez earlier in the week, who is from the Movie Fan Cast.
He might have got the days wrong?
He might have. From the now defunct Movie Fan Cast, as we know, it's kind of disappeared. But I did speak to him and I said he should come on and help us review a film because he hasn't done anything for a while. And he was really excited, but he hasn't turned up. So I don't know where Charlie is. If Charlie does happen to pop into Skype at some point during the show, we might bring him in just because he's around. So I am a little disappointed he's not here for this. But the good news is, and I don't know if I'm actually allowed to make this public or not, but I'm going to because it's just kind of the way I am, is that Charlie and Brad may soon be back. Doing some other work. So I will report more on that as time goes on. I have said to him that once they've got something set in stone, send me artwork and we'll put it up as advertising on the front of the page as well. So yes, Charlie and Brad may be back.
Yeah.
All right. So keep your eyes open for that. And as soon as I know more about it, I will let you know.
Yeah.
Okay. On to Paul. Paul is directed by Greg Mottola. And if that name is not familiar to you, he's the director who directed Superbad.
Yes.
And it's written by Simon Pegg and Nick Frost. The good news, because they wrote and directed, they wrote the Cornetto series. They wrote Shaun of the Dead and, of course, Hot Fuzz.
Yeah.
And there is a third one to that apparently coming, but it's about whether they can all schedule themselves together with Edgar Wright. It stars Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, Kristen Wiig, Jason Bateman, John Heder, Now I'm going to massacre this last name, Joe Lotruglio, I think it's pronounced, and the voice of Seth Rogen. This plot is taken straight from Universal Pictures themselves. No responsibility for their own. I actually abridged it because it starts with, as typical with a movie plot, they always go, the exciting new comedy, blah, 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 you know, that sort of stuff. I took all that stuff off.
You cut out all the exaggeration.
I cut out all of the
Wank.
The flower. Okay.
Oh, really? I would have gone with wank.
A wank. Okay, wank's good. For the past 60 years, an alien named Paul has been hanging out at a top-secret military base.
Like hanging out.
Hanging out. When he discovers he's been taken prisoner, I love it. For 40 years, he didn't realize he was a prisoner. When he realizes he's been taken prisoner, the space-traveling smartass decides to escape the compound and hop on the first vehicle out of town, a rented RV containing Earthlings Graham Willie and Clive Gollings. Chased by federal agents and the fanatical father of a young woman that they accidentally kidnap, Graham and Clive hatch a fumbling escape plan to return Paul to his mothership. And as the two nerds struggle to help, one little green man might just take his fellow outcast from misfits to intergalactic heroes.
Interesting.
It's one way.
It's dramatic.
It's one way of putting it. It's a little dramatic. We do have the trailer here. Let's have a look at the trailer for Paul, and then we'll come back and talk about it.
Going on a road trip, huh?
Yeah.
On a tour of America's most famous UFO hotspots.
I hear that.
I cannot believe we're going to see Area 51.
I'm Paul.
What have you done to him?
He fainted.
Yeah, but you made him faint.
But it's not like I set my phaser to faint.
You've got a phaser?
Oh, God. I really need your help. This is a matter of life and death.
Heads up.
We just got reassigned.
I want E.T. back in his
fishbowl or dead ASAP.
Hey! Reese's Pieces!
Yes, thank you.
What if he inserts a probe into our you-know-what?
Apparently they don't do that.
Anyone want one of these? Anyone? Huh? Morning.
He's from another world.
He cannot be from space. It's not possible.
You saw it for yourself.
He's right there.
Are they looking? Are they looking right now?
How did you go invisible?
Like Predator.
It's a camouflage response.
But you can do it anytime you want.
Anytime.
Oh, my God!
You gentlemen seen anything unusual this evening?
No, not really.
Guys, this is too dangerous. I can make it on my own from here.
We are in this together, Paul.
Tell me which way the little green guy went.
Why are we holding hands?
So we look like a family.
Just a couple of regular guys walking down a street with a small cowboy.
Break it down, boys. Stoke the fire.
This is the most fun I have ever had.
Do you think he'll be okay?
Yeah, he'll be fine.
Yeah.
Don't worry, I got it all under control.
What are you doing?
Just watch.
It's a miracle. Why would you do that?
I'm not gonna eat a dead bird, am I?
All right. Great soundtrack. Great soundtrack.
Oh, man.
Fantastic soundtrack. All right. Well, let's see. Last week, we started with you, and you got all serious and deep. Why don't we start with you again?
Look, when going to a film like this, I have been told by people in advance that apparently this film is very much still one of the Cornetto trilogy, even though they don't want to acknowledge that. Reality is it's just not part of, as Celine put it, it's just not one of the Cornetto trilogy because Edgar Wright wasn't involved.
That's right.
Realistically, they wrote this with the complete intention of it being the third one, and I'll be interested to see if they can come up with another thing because they really have hit the three geek markets now.
Yeah,
they've
true.
Hit all three. They've hit the horror movies, they've
action
hit
movies.
The action movies, and they've hit the sci-fi movies. So what they were planning to do is pretty much what I think we got. I mean, realistically, I think the Superbad director was probably more about organizing the action scenes and how the actors stood in front of the camera. I think a lot of the actual shot work comes straight out of that kind of vein of the Nick Frost and Simon Pegg kind of world.
And let's face it, I don't think there was a lot of directing of those two men.
Yeah.
They know what they were doing.
Oh, dude. And you can tell that when they walk on set, they are just playing themselves. And I mean, like, Nick Frost is still just playing Nick Frost, and Simon Pegg is still playing Simon Pegg. And, you know, like, I mean, they do a great job at that. And I think I didn't really expect much more than that. Like, I went into this film with relatively low expectations because people have gone meh about it. And I get that. I get that it's not the world's greatest film. For me, I really enjoyed it. And I think one of the reasons I really enjoyed it was the fact that it is just an entire wink to everyone that's ever seen everything.
Absolutely,
that is
sci-fi. I agree
films.
With you 100%. I think that if you are an enormous film nerd, mm-hmm. this film is going to make you laugh yeah. out loud from beginning to end. Mm. Because I found myself chuckling all the way through it. Because almost every second line is a reference to another film in some way. I mean, this is what they did. They just completely referenced sci-fi, nerdery, and all the way through it. In fact, I will go so far, not to spoil anything, but I'll go so far as to say from a particular key moment near the end of the film to the end of the film. So the last 10 minutes, I don't think there's a line of dialogue there that isn't from something else.
Yeah.
They really have just gone all out and said, let's have fun with this, you know?
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. Mm. I enjoyed it a lot. I actually sat there chuckling to myself. I'm not the world's biggest Seth Rogen fan. Mm. I think he was very funny as a support player in things like The 40-Year-Old Virgin. Mm. I think as he's become the star of his films, he is not nearly as funny.
I think the biggest problem is that he's suffering from what a lot of Hollywood comedians end up suffering from, which is the fact that he gets typecasted. It's difficult to shake a typecast, especially when you are, to the world, an incredibly funny person. It's like people, critics like us, will kind of turn around and get a little bit uppity about that because you are just playing the one person over and over again. And it's like, it works with this film, like you said, because you can't see him, but also because he got to play a lighter, more grounded character.
Absolutely.
And I mean, like, I've been thinking about that more and more since we spoke after the film and realized that I think Seth Rogen has the ability to play other people. I just don't ever think he's been given the chance to.
No, I agree,
and
yeah.
You actually feel a real love for Paul as a character. He's a very heartwarming character because he just wants everybody to just enjoy their lives.
Yeah.
And, like, essentially, he's just out to help everyone.
He's a freewheeling dude. Yeah.
Exactly. And, like, I think that's why you can kind of really attach to him as a character, because from, you know, the moment that they start out in this film, you can tell that Paul is a, as they say, he's a bit of a jerk,
yeah.
But he is, look, he's just a, he's a fun guy, and he's helpful, and he's lovable, and it's like, all the support cast around him are strong people. Like, you've got the boys, and they will be doing what they're doing. Kristen Wiig plays an absolutely adorable character.
Which is a real change of pace for her, because Kristen Wiig always plays these kind of bizarre, slightly left-of-center characters. For those who have watched the unrated version or the director's cut version of Forgetting Sarah Marshall, she plays a yoga instructor in a scene that is just twisted. It's just bent. And it wasn't in the theatrical version. Mm. And she's very funny, but it's very odd. Here, she's actually really soft.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
she's this really nice character. And you sit there and go, and she's playing a romantic lead, which is just something I never thought I would see Kristen Wiig actually playing.
Yeah.
And she's good. She's very, very, very good in it. I liked her a lot. I really like Jason Bateman. I've always liked Jason Bateman, and I like the fact he's playing this tough-ass FBI agent. I think he's kind of fun.
It was really good to see him not playing the bumbling idiot for once. It was nice. Like, he played straight better than I thought he would. Like, I mean, I have seen him in The Kingdom, and he plays kind of a relatively straight role in that as well.
I forgot he was even in The Kingdom.
Yeah, I know, right? but was it called The Kingdom?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was. I mean, we've seen him play straight, but he is balls-to-the-wall hardcore in this film, and he does it so well. And look, the camera. Cameo, the large cameo at the end of the film, which we won't wreck, but definitely sells itself well.
Yeah.
And
this film's got cameos throughout it, though, as well, with the cameo of Jane Lynch, as well as the woman who runs the diner, the UFO diner. Jane Lynch is in everything at the moment, but she's always fun to watch, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And I do really like some of the choices of kind of like little throwaway lines or little throwaway scenes, like what I think we're going out on the show tonight,
yes.
Which I thought was awesome, which was kind of a bluegrass version of the Cantina track, which was just a real cool.
Yeah, they go into like this redneck bar at one point in the film, and I've actually got the name. It's the band is the Sid Masters and the Swing Riders, and they're like playing live, and they're playing this kind of bluegrassy version of the Cantina theme from Star Wars. And it's just awesome. And we're going to play that as our closing music today. Their soundtrack is awesome. Really good. David Arnold scored it, but it's full of all these really great numbers mixed in with his score. Yep. It's a really good soundtrack.
Well, interestingly enough, because James has gone, an alien is a more grounded character. Well, funnily enough, it is. It's really hard to kind of believe, but the real sell for this kind for the film is that it's not just sort of like everybody else trying to help the alien. The alien is sort of the most sort of peaceful and spiritual character out of the whole group.
And he's kind of sorting them all out.
Yeah, exactly. You know? And that's what makes it really cool, because Paul is kind of brought all these people together and is kind of trying to make them feel comfortable and happy about themselves. And it wasn't what I expected going in. I expected him to kind of be the chaos, but in essence, he is surrounded by chaos.
He's kind of the calmest character.
And it's sort of like, that's what really works for it. It's like the fact that you go in expecting Paul to be kind of the crazy guy that gets everybody in trouble. Realistically, he's not going out actively searching for trouble. It just
Trouble's following him.
And look, I really love that. And look, the crescendo of sort of action in this film is quite spectacular.
Yes.
It's over the top and quite crazy, but it just works. And it just works in the best kinds of ways.
Look, I really enjoyed it. And I thought the two bumbling FBI agents who were trying to make a name for themselves, led by John Heder.
Spaceman balls.
were just wonderful bumbling. And the fact that Jason Bateman pulls up to their roadblock and they're playing hide and seek. These guys really are morons, you know, and they are very funny in the roles. It's a very amusing film. Is it a masterpiece of cinema? Probably not, but you know, it is fun and it is well worth the money to go and just have a good time. Comedy is a really hard one to review, and this is why we don't often review mini comedies, because comedy out of all forms of cinema is probably the most subjective thing in the world, because what one person thinks is funny is not what somebody else does. But every now and again a film comes along where you go, this is kind of universally funny.
Well, it's the kind of film that, like, you wouldn't mind if someone pulled out like a year from now and kind of went, hey, look, we're all together and we're having a few beers as a group. It's like, do you guys want to watch Paul again? It's like, I could easily just sit down and watch this and just have it in the background kind of a film. It's like, it's fun, but it's the kind of comedy I like, where it's like, it doesn't take itself too seriously, but at the same time, it still has a really good story arc.
Yes,
so absolutely. It's still enjoyable. And then, like a great episode of The Simpsons or Family Guy or something like that, there's references all throughout. So there's stuff to turn around and get.
Literally, you're going to have to watch this film two or three times to pick up on all the references. There are so many. And I'm hoping that when it comes out on Blu-ray, they'll do what they did like with Scott Pilgrim, which is have a trivia track which tells you which each reference is. Because there are millions of them. And they're going crazy. And there's actually, I believe, Spaced has a trivia track where they tell you where every reference comes from as well. Look, I'm going to say I recommend this film thoroughly. I'm going to say, go out and see it. Go have fun. Don't go... Clear your mind. Don't go there sitting there going, it better be good, you know? Just go there and just enjoy the ride.
As we say quite often on the show, it's a great Friday night film. It's the kind of film that you go out and you just want to be entertained. You just want to go out and enjoy your night by going out and seeing a film.
Absolutely. If you want to put a critical eye to it and you'd say, how does it compare with Hot Fuzz or Shaun of the Dead? Well, it's not as good as those.
Absolutely.
It's still a fun film. And this is where, you know...
Oddly enough, though, and we talked about this before, I don't think if Edgar Wright had been involved, that would have been that different.
No, I don't think so either.
No.
It may have been slightly more stylized, because Edgar Wright's got a much more stylized eye.
He loves committing a style to film.
That's right. Like, he would have made homages even in just the camera work. He would have played up on it. Whereas Mottola, I don't think, is quite as clever. But I think that's probably visually would be the only real difference. I think the comedy, I mean, it really is the script by Pegan Frost that carries this film through, and it's a very funny little script. And I gotta say, Seth Rogen, keep that up, I'll be a fan again. You know, so it was actually pretty good. After the abomination of Green Hornet earlier this year, it was nice to actually be able to say, Seth Rogen, this worked. So yeah, no, I do recommend it. It's good. Okay. You gonna recommend it?
Yeah, absolutely.
Wow, we're actually in agreement on something.
I disagree.
2 weeks? 3 weeks? How long has it been since we agreed?
I don't know.
All right. So we're going to move into our entertainment section where we talk about a little bit of news. We actually are a little bit trailer heavy again this week. I didn't think we would be, funnily enough. And then suddenly all this stuff kind of crept out of the woodwork on us. So let's start, first of all, with a sad note.
Yeah.
Sydney Lumet or Lumet or Lumet, depending on how you want to pronounce it. There's been several different people who have pronounced it different ways. I always thought it was Sydney Lumet, but I could be wrong. Has died at age 86 of lymphoma. This is a real tragedy. This man was a genius filmmaker who has...
This man was one of those guys that led me into being a film critic. When I first saw Dog Day Afternoon, I will always remember being like, that was more than just a film.
Yes.
There was so much to that film.
Absolutely.
And like character work and stuff like this was just stronger than anyone I'd ever seen do. It's just like...
Probably the finest performance of Pacino's career.
Absolutely.
Probably next to The Godfather.
Mm.
But no, look, the man, he directed, I mean, The Verdict, he directed Dog Day Afternoon, he directed, I think he did he do Network? I think he did Network as well. I mean, the man is a brilliant director. 12 Angry Men was his first film. 12 Angry Men is a fantastic film. Yes, he did direct Network. Serpico was another one.
For The Devil Knows You're Dead.
Yeah, before The Devil Knows You're Dead. The man, his films have been nominated for over 40 Academy Awards over his span of his career. It is an amazing career, and he will be missed. He really will be. I actually didn't even know he was sick.
Yeah.
So they've kept it very quiet, and he did pass on. So Sydney Lumet, rest in peace. All right, so from there, I don't want to jump straight into a trailer. That seems like it's almost in bad taste. So let's talk about Peter Jackson instead.
Yeah.
Peter Jackson has actually been talking. He's been talking on his Facebook page, and he's been talking about why 40 frames per second. Now, we talked about this last week. He's shooting The Hobbit in native 3D and 48 frames a second. This led to Josh's quote with, "I hope we get a private screening because I'm going to make a mess."
That film is going to look insanely good.
It's going to look insanely good. And he's actually come out in a long message on Facebook and actually explained why he's doing this. And I'll just read you a couple of little bits. I know it's a long thing, so we don't want to read the whole thing, but the link will be there for you to have a look at. He says, "We are indeed shooting at a higher frame rate. The key thing to understand is this process requires both shooting and projecting at 48 frames per second. Rather than the usual 24 frames per second, films have been shot at 24 frames per second since the late 1920s. So the result looks like normal speed, but the image has hugely enhanced clarity and smoothness. Looking at 24 frames every second may seem okay, and we've all seen thousands of films like this over the last 90 years, but there is often quite a lot of blur in each frame during fast movements, and if the camera is moving around quickly, the image can judder or strobe."
Mm-hmm.
You don't get that at 48 frames.
No, you do not.
And apparently, if you go through the entire article, he says that... some of the people who he's working with, DOPs and stuff, were a little bit skeptical of this, wondering whether or not this would actually work. He said as soon as they sat down and actually started to watch some footage on this, they were sold.
Well, the other thing that I found very interesting is in this article and actually several others, I have seen a lot of referencing to the fact that if we could shoot at 48 frames a second and then project at 48 frames a second, we would not get the eye strain we do from 3D.
No, because even though it looks smooth, we are still perceiving a flicker on screen.
Exactly.
And that flicker will be gone at 48 frames.
Exactly, which would mean that 3D could become a viable source of something to watch on TV if we can get it up to 48 frames. And look, as more than just a film fanatic or a film reviewer, I am just really excited as a tech head to see this. Like, I will travel to Melbourne if I have to get the first cinema that I can that will do this at 48 frames a second. I really want to see what it's like.
Theoretically, the projecting back at 48 frames a second should not be a problem. We don't need to retrofit theaters for this, because if it's digital, which it will be digital because it's digital 3D, digital projectors can project back at any speed.
Yeah, exactly.
So in theory, all those digital cinemas out there are not going to have any problems with this at all.
Yeah.
They should be ready to be able to take this on. Now, he also goes on to say that, and this was a very interesting piece of history for you guys, Douglas Trumbull, who is the director of Brainstorm and was the special effects technician behind such films as 2001 and Blade Runner, actually promoted 60 frames per second process called ShowScan about 30 years ago. And in fact, Brainstorm was supposed to be shot in ShowScan, and he couldn't get it together. He couldn't get the money together because ShowScan requires special cinemas, because this was the day of film, of course, and all sorts of... And it, ShowScan was amazing and looked fantastic, but just nobody adopted it.
Yeah.
So Douglas Trumbull was way ahead of it back then and basically saying, this is where we should be going. James Cameron, as we know, has picked up the mantle and is basically saying we need to increase frame rates. Digital cinema is what's making this happen today. If it wasn't for the digital cinema revolution, we would not be seeing this sort of movement. Because let's face it, the problem with 48 frames on film is the extra wear and tear of moving sprockets through metal wheels at that speed for an extended period of time will fry out. The film will shred it. So yeah. Digital is the way to go for this. So I'm very excited. It's a big, long article on Facebook. Go have a look at it. I love this picture of the clapperboard that actually has
FPS.
FPS 48 frames. Love it. So go have a look at that. It's in our show notes.
I would have made that really small and at 48, motherfucker.
48, bitch. All right. Now, we all know, well, I hope you all know, that a sequel or a... Well, I say sequel. It's not even a sequel. It's not even a real prequel. It's some sort of new weird hybrid. New Planet of the Apes movie is coming.
What?
Now, this is not to do with Tim Burton or anything like that. This is a 20th Century Fox.
Yes,
is trying
because if it was Tim Burton, it would all be in funny colors. It would be... the soundtrack would be done by Danny Elfman. And the only people in it would be Heather Bonacarter and... Which, funnily enough, let me say,
Tim Burton's Planet of the Apes a few years ago starred Helena Bonham Carter, had music by Danny Elfman.
Yes, it did.
Didn't have the multiple colors, though.
No.
No, it had a muted color palette. Anyway, the point is that a new film is coming out. It is called Rise of the Planet of the Apes, and it's kind of going back to being a prequel to how it all kind of started. Mm. It stars James Franco, which is kind of a plus in its way, and it has creature effects by Weta.
Oh.
So I have the trailer.
Let's
so
watch.
The first trailer has come out for this, and let's have a look at this.
Our drug allows the brain to repair itself. We call it the cure. We're ready to move on to the next phase. This one.
This is wrong, Will.
This has the potential to change lives.
Some things aren't meant to be changed.
Does it work?
Like we predicted. With one exception. The drug has radically boosted brain functioning.
You mean increased intelligence?
You have no idea what you're dealing with.
They're not people, you know.
Amazingly human faces
totally
on this.
Totally fucking in.
I mean,
and Brian Cox is in it.
Brian Cox.
I'm totally fucking in.
And the body actor who's doing the motion capture for the apes, Andy Serkis.
Yeah.
So after King Kong, he's back again doing more apes.
Dude, and I'm totally cool with that. And Franco's being a good Franco as opposed to, you know, Academy Awards Franco.
I love the fact that they're not talking monkeys, men in masks. These are just monkeys. They're just apes.
Like, honestly, the only reason that I was kind of against it is I can't really get through the campness that is the original kind of Planet of the Apes idea. This just looks badass. Like, it just looks like...
This could lead on to an interesting series of films if they build on this.
Yeah,
so,
absolutely.
It kind of washes the taste of the Tim Burton one out as well, which I thought was a bit of a disappointing film. Great visuals, great makeup.
Mm.
Just dumb film, you know?
Damn right. Del Trigger's saying totally seems better than Burton's.
Yeah,
I'm
absolutely
down with that, man. I totally agree.
So I'm looking forward to that one. I think we've got something going there. Now, we've got Superman news. And or as I listed it, in the more we hear about it, the less we want to see it news.
And the more bizarre that like their marketing campaign seems to be crazy. Going. Because I don't get how do you project your marketing to work when you actually are basically lying about everything? Like, how is that supposed to work?
All right, let's explain this. First thing, it was announced, it has an official title now. Mm. They've dropped Superman from the title. Yeah. It is just called The Man of Steel.
Right.
Okay? So not to be confused with the Shaquille O'Neal film Steel that came out in the 80s. All right, this is The Man of Steel. All right? Yeah. Second piece of news that came out this week was that Michael Shannon has been cast as Zod. Huh. Now, Zack Snyder said Zod was not in this film. And when the rumors about Zod appearing about 3 or 4 weeks ago came out, he said again, Zod is not in this film. And now Michael Shannon has been cast as Zod. So, lie number one.
What?
Lie number two says that Diane Lane, who's been cast as Martha Kent, recently, and my link is not working again. God damn. Oh, there it is. Diane Lane was recently allowed to sit and read the full script. I love the fact that she's committed to a film that she hasn't read.
Yeah.
But she sat down and read the whole script. And apparently she was under lock and key while reading the script. Yeah. They put her in a room with guards and the whole bit. And her quote is, "I read the script under lock and key," Lane told us at the LA screening of her new HBO film, Cinema Verte. This comes from, by the way, I'm quoting from E! Online. Okay. And it says, "I was locked in a room with the script and was only allowed 3 hours with it. I nailed it into my memory. I'm really excited. I'm really not allowed to talk much about it, I think, but it does cover the entire range of years from infancy on." Wait a minute. Zack Snyder said this is not an origin story.
This guy just needs to get in front of a camera and put this to bed. Like, stop lying and just give us the story. Look, we can go along with you if you have a reason for having a story or to try and set up something in particular. Or maybe it's a storyline drive or something that needs to be explained from infancy. Fine, but why the fuck are you lying about
just
it?
Just tell us.
We have done this so many times.
And do you know what it is? It's the fact that this is a Christopher Nolan production. Christopher Nolan is a master of secrecy. Mm. The problem is, Zack Snyder is not.
Mm.
And so what you've got is this two worlds, because Christopher Nolan is obviously trying to keep a lid on this.
Mm.
Stuff is leaking like a leaky boat, and Zack Snyder doesn't know how to keep a lid on secrecy, so he's just lying to try and cover his own tracks. It's almost like that thing, you know, the kid who breaks the cup and goes, "Wasn't me."
Mm.
You know? It's like he doesn't know how to do this secrecy thing, so just give up.
Yeah.
You know? Spill the beans.
Or put it over to freaking Nolan and just give him 5 minutes in front of a camera and he'll fix it for us.
He will fix it, but just close your mouth, because at the moment you're being a little bit like McG during the production of Terminator Salvation, where he said all these things, all these words came out of his mouth and none of it was true.
Mm.
And I think it's time you just like close your mouth, Zach, and just get on with making the film.
Exactly.
All right? Because... And the chat room has actually said that, you know, Michael Shannon is awesome. He was really good in Boardwalk Empire. I'm not complaining about Michael Shannon. Michael Shannon is fabulous. Mm. And I think he'll be a great Zod.
Mm. He's got that coldness to him.
Yeah, yeah.
It's just in that image that we had up on screen, it's just you just look at his face and he is just calculating. It's just
I can see him as Zod, absolutely. No problem at all. The problem I have was with Zack Snyder, but that's a whole different issue. Alright, so this week, a new trailer for Priest came out. Josh and I had a look at it, and I wrote it up on the site, and I put it up on geekactually.com, which is where you can find it. Josh and I differ on this film a lot, because I'm just still not excited. And I don't know why. I don't know why. But have a look at it. It's actually fairly short. It's only like a minute and a half. So have a quick look at this trailer, and we'll come back and have a quick chat.
They get you, gun arm.
Why?
You're gonna need it. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. They
Vampire Menace.
That's a lie.
The war is over!
No, it's just beginning.
You have no idea what's coming, Priest.
You know, I think I'm still having trouble with Paul Bettany as a badass.
No, dude, I'm not. Look, I'll tell you where this movie's going to end up somewhere for me. It's going to end up somewhere between Underworld and Judge Dredd. And either way, I win. Because I love both of those films. It's like, if I get Judge Dredd, it'll be shit, and it's the kind of movie I throw on with a bunch of my friends to laugh
Camp
my
classic.
Fucking
yeah.
ass off. And then on the other end of the scale, I have Underworld, which is a not that great, but fun to watch action
I
film.
I quite like Wonderworld.
And like, you know what? I'm sitting there going, no matter which side of that scale you hit, I win. So fuck it, I'm in.
What if it's Resident Evil Afterlife?
Nah, it won't happen. You wanna know why? Because it just doesn't have the campy acting. And it look, no, you know what it is? It's that none of the actors seem that stupid on film.
All right, I'll give you a better analogy there. What if it's Legion?
It won't be Legion.
It's Paul Bettany.
It's Paul Bettany, but it has Carl Urban in it. And if someone tried to turn it into... Well, this is just my opinion of what I would imagine would happen on
hope,
set.
You live in hope, don't you?
if it became Legion, he would actually just start killing members of the offset, you know, sort of camera work people and stuff like that. He just looks like that kind of a guy. He just looks badass all the time. So it's just, you can't fuck up
See,
a movie.
I look at Paul Bettany, I think of Wimbledon, you know, I look at Master and Commander.
Yes, but then I look at the other end of the scale, and you've got Carl Urban, who did Red, and then to a lesser extent, Doom. But he was good in Doom. No, wait, he wasn't.
No, he wasn't.
Shit.
No, he wasn't.
Fine, it might be Legion, but I can live in hope. Okay?
There was a comment that went by in the chat room just a second ago, and we got to come back to it because it was wonderful. Here it is. Callison actually said about our Superman story from before, and it kind of is relevant to Priest as well because it's kind of how I feel about Priest. It says, I have but one thing to say about the Superman movie. It's either going to be Batman Begins or Wolverine. There will be no middle ground with this film.
Yeah, I can still see it landing in the middle. I think that would be worse for me. That would create a new low for me. Like, Wolverine is my low, because it's like a fan-made movie with all the right parts that you managed to royally fuck up. And Batman Begins is kind of like, you know, the staple of what is the reboot, the correct way to reboot something. And if you landed somewhere in the middle of that, you could do more damage than if it was Wolverine. Because if it's Wolverine...
Yeah, but he's saying you won't be in the middle. He says it'll be one end of the scale.
No,
the
but that's what I'm saying. Yeah. I'm saying that there is a possibility for it to hit
could
in, the
fall in the middle.
And I think that's the worst thing, because it's like Wolverine, we've all just pushed to the side and forgotten about.
Well, because
like,
if it falls in the middle, then it just becomes mediocre.
Exactly. And if it falls in the middle, it's got all of the crappiness of the one end of the scale, and then it's tried to reboot and make it something better, so you're going to end up with an even worse place. So
here's a
there
thought
is a
for
possibility
you.
For the middle.
It could be Superman 4. Yeah, baby!
Get out. Get the fuck out.
Kill Superman. I must destroy Superman. If you haven't seen Superman 4 in a long time, go back and watch it again. It's one of the funniest films ever made.
No.
It is so stupid. All right, let's move on. Priest, the jury is still out. For some reason, I cannot get excited about it.
And I can.
I will probably end up enjoying this film, and you will probably end up hating this film.
Wonderful.
But
don't care.
From trailers, I just
can't
seem...
I'm allowed to go and excited.
Absolutely, by all means. Remember going back... a while ago, we talked about our list was 70 or films that were a product of their time and could never be remade.
Yes.
Yep. And one of them on my list was a film called Billy Jack, which I said, the Tom McLaughlin film, where I said, which could never be remade. It was really a product of its time. Well, apparently Mark Wahlberg wants to remake Billy Jack.
This man needs to stop getting power.
So I'm not even going to go into detail on this story. All I'm going to say is Mark Wahlberg has a slew of films he's trying to get made right now, and one of them is a remake of Billy Jack, and all I can think is, oh, God. So
man just needs to stop.
We have... I'm kind of reshuffling the order of these stories a little bit because we kind of reshuffled at the beginning, and I don't want to put too many videos next to each other. But let's do a little bit of a video one right here and basically say that... a while ago, about a year ago, I wrote the article up. You can find it at geekactually.com. About a year ago, a video turned up on YouTube called Mortal Kombat Rebirth. And everybody kind of watched it and went, what the fuck is this?
No, they went, that was fucking amazing.
But what the fuck is it?
Yeah.
Is it a trailer? Is it a scene from a movie? Is it a fan film? Was it an elaborate promo for a new game?
And we all did some digging.
And we found out that it is actually... It was actually a promo reel made by a director. He's the director who directed, his name has gone out of my head, but he's the guy who directed the remake of Fame and a lot of other concert films and saw and directed concerts for other people. And his name is, I almost had it. Anyway, it'll come back to me. Kevin Tancheron.
Yeah, and he worked with Michael J. White to create the video.
That's right, and he got together Michael J. White, and they pulled in some friends like Jerry Ryan.
Jai White, whatever.
And they put $7,500 together, and they made this as a pitch idea to see if they could actually make a new TV series based on Mortal Kombat. It was so friggin' outrageously popular that Warner Brothers came to the party, and Warner Brothers has funded them to not make a new TV series, though, but to make... a web series, and it's a 10-part, 12-minute episode web series with budget. I mean, this is, it's special effects, fighting, great shooting. In fact, I have a clip. Let's play a clip for you of the new show, which is called Mortal Kombat Legacy. This is from episode one, and it's just a quick clip from this film, just to give you an idea of the production value of it.
They know we were coming.
Now's not the time. I'm going for Sonya. Got this?
I got it. Go.
All right, cover me.
All right, so that gives you a taste of it. Lots of fighting. I tried to find some.
It looks a little under. Like it needs a few more coats of paint, I felt. But
well, maybe. But it is, as I say, it is a made-for-web series, and all I could think is,
I hate that idea though. Why can't we have a well-made web
episode? It's still pretty well-made for what it is, yeah. And you got to remember that this is distributed free. So Warner Bros. Has taken a gamble with this. This is a really un-Warner Bros.
But it feels to me like maybe they're rolling the dice for the first time at actually getting this stuff off the ground.
Yeah,
like,
and what my suspicion is that it's going to be a case of once the 10-ish episodes have played out, they will re-edit it so it's one continuous story. So that's 10, that'll be 120 minutes long, and put it out on Blu-ray.
Yeah, which will be fantastic because it's like, what's the difference between that and putting it out on TV? What's the difference?
Absolutely.
In fact, it reaches a
The only thing that they're not getting here is any advertising dollars. But,
dude,
you know,
the audience is so much broader. It is hitting everywhere before you release
it.
Well,
last time I looked at YouTube, I think it's up to like 1.5 million downloads or something like that. It's being distributed by Machinima on their YouTube channel exclusively. We have it embedded at geekactually.com. You can watch it there, or you can follow the link and go straight to YouTube. Either way, they get to click for it, not us. I do suggest you go have a look at it. We also have the link in the article for the original Rebirth, if you haven't seen that. So go and have a look at that. It is fascinating. This is an experiment that I am right behind. And I would also like to say, and I put this in my article as well, that I think we owe a big thank you to Joss Whedon at this point, because Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog set a tone and a pace for things to come.
Yeah.
And I think that's really what's going on here at this point. So, do check this out. It is really, really interesting. And even if you're not a Mortal Kombat fan, go play it just to show support for this concept. Go give them the click. Everybody really needs to go give them the click and just let them know that we support this concept.
Yeah,
Because it is a really, really interesting concept. Okay, another article that caught my eye was that Real Steel, you know, the film with Hugh Jackman about the Rock'em Sock'em Robots, early screenings were so positive on it that the producers are so confident they've already hired the writer to write the sequel. So the sequel is already really under development without the first film even coming out yet. So it's made me curious now.
All I want is I want them to end up inside the suits because I want this to become One Must Fall the movie. But that's just me, and I'll keep fighting for that concept until it happens. But once you get to that level, that would be awesome because the story to One Must Fall was fantastic and it was an awesome concept. And to see that in a movie is just like a dream concept for me. It's like giant metal robots fighting in giant cages.
Yeah.
And just have dudes inside that can actually die if they die.
Fantastic. Did you ever see a Stuart Gordon film from the late 80s or early 90s called Robot Jocks?
Yeah.
That's kind of where guys ride in big robots and they do like... Basically, the concept is in the future, war is taking place in an arena.
Yeah.
And they have these huge giant fighting robots and they ride in the heads. Mm. And it is so much fun. It is so camp and stupid and low budget. I mean, it's literally stop motion animation and stuff. But... conceptually, great idea.
Yeah. Well, let's hope.
All right. Now, we have two trailers. We were only going to do one trailer, but then one surfaced this morning.
Yeah.
And I was weighing it up and thinking, do I play just one of these and we'll ditch the other one till next week? But I'm going to play both of them because one of them is Geek Cred, and that's the one that surfaced this morning, which is there is a brand new trailer for Cowboys and Aliens. And so we kind of have to play that one. But I really want to show this one because for us... Mm. This is something I think we want to see. For those who know David Hyde Pierce, who was Frasier's brother in the sitcom Frasier, and the voice, I believe, of Abe Sapien in the first Hellboy film. I think he was the voice, wasn't he?
Yeah, and the second one.
And the second one. He's very snooty, very upper class, and so forth. He's a very funny man. He's very, very sharp sense of humor. Mm. Well, like all good comedians, every now and again you think, what would it be like if they got to play a dark role? Right?
Yeah.
Well, this trailer has surfaced, and I've never heard of this movie, called The Perfect Host.
Yeah.
And it's David Hyde Pierce playing a psychopath. And I thought, oh, man, let's have a look.
At this stage, police estimate a take of $300,000.
John is a criminal.
Taylor, a 33-year-old Caucasian, is said to be driving a maroon 1980s model Buick. Police ask anyone who identifies Taylor or his vehicle to contact their local authorities.
Yeah?
Yes, is this Warwick?
Warwick?
Warwick, who's this?
It's John. I'm a friend of Julia's.
He's a gentleman.
Of course you can come in.
Can I get you something to drink?
One of the bank's employees identified the man as Los Angeles resident John Taylor. Taylor is extremely dangerous and should not be approached.
You can't kill me. I'm having a dinner party.
Okay, here's how this is going to go. As long as you can stay out of my way until morning, you won't get hurt.
But some people...
It's a cheeky little drop, isn't it?
...are not who they appear to be.
So what now? John, oh, we have a real criminal right here at our own table. Is everyone not enjoying themselves? I can't speak for everyone here, but I'm having a great time.
How much have you had to drink?
I'm sitting here with a lunatic.
Lighten up, John. It's a party. Roman, give me a hand with John. All right, ready? One, two, three.
Looney Tunes.
That looks fantastically weird.
Doesn't it?
And just, you know that that's just my type of movie absolutely. In a nutshell. That looks fantastic.
I love the fact that this party's in his head.
Yeah, exactly. It's fantastic.
I just like that one line where the guy's sitting in the chair and nobody around, he goes, well, I don't know about everybody else, but I'm having a great time.
Yeah. No, that looks cool. I'm very in for that.
We need to make a correction here really quickly.
Yes. No, Doug Jones
does Abe Sapien.
Yep.
But he sounds just like David Hyde Pierce. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Now, the question is, and this is the question I've got, is Doug Jones just the body of Abe Sapien, and does David Hyde Pierce come in and do the voice, or is it all Doug Jones? I don't know. It doesn't say that on IMDb, so we have no idea. But either way, it sounds like him. Anyway, so, and now, without further ado, let's do the unshow-noted trailer for Cowboys and Aliens, which we just, this literally, I woke up this morning, checked the feeds as I always do, and it's like, oh man, rush up here and encode it really quickly. Cowboys and Aliens is the new Jon Favreau film, the director of Iron Man, as we know, and this is the film starring Harrison Ford, Daniel Craig, and Olivia Wilde, based on the Marvel or DC comics, I'm not sure. Somebody correct me in the chat room, it's Marvel or DC, but it's a one-shot. It's basically,
I think it's DC.
Could be. I'm not sure, but it's basically a one issue graphic novel about cowboys and aliens. Quite frankly, so without further ado, here is the new full trailer for Cowboys and Aliens.
I woke up in the desert, like I've been dropped out of the sky.
You got a name?
I don't know. I'm gonna need you to come with us. Wouldn't do that if I was you.
Yeah, that's Lonergan, boss.
I want that man. You give him to me now.
I need to know where you came from.
So do I.
You don't remember anything. Survivors. It's what they did to my people.
I've seen good men do bad things. Bad men do good things. You go get our people back.
They're here.
Should we step in? Looks like he's doing fine.
God damn.
God damn.
The two things that make that trailer awesome are the fact that Sam, I believe that was Sam Rockwell, wasn't it?
I'm not sure.
It really looked like it. And
Olivia Wilde takes her clothes off, so, you know.
Yeah, terrible choice of music, I gotta say, because it just doesn't really fit in.
It's so Jon Favreau, though. It's kind of like the trailer to Iron Man.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But it's just, like, cut up into shreds, and it's just, I don't know. It didn't work. But, look, the trailer itself looks amazing. I'm sorry, but visually stunning.
Look, it's a film that I really want to see. I actually don't think either of the two trailers have actually truly done it justice yet.
No, but it's the kind of thing you want to really allude to. You don't kind of want to give it away because it's like the whole story is going to require you to focus on it a lot because it's going to go into a lot of weird places. But look, I'm in. I think it looks fantastic. fantastic.
Yeah, no, I'm a big Daniel Craig fan. I like the cast. I like John Favreau. There's no reason. I've read the comic book. It doesn't resemble the comic book at all, but that's fine. Let them go off in their own direction with it. It's cowboys, it's aliens. Who cares? Now, just very quickly, Delta said, you know, Ustream really should let us full screen these feeds. Wouldn't do you much good, Delta, because we actually only go out at 480 by 270 pixels. So you full screen it up, it's going to look like crap anyway. What else we got? Yes, James from Melbourne has said about the Perfect Host trailer.
Yeah.
Has said, what was the release date of that film? Was the online before cinema release? Yes, he picked up on that. This is a trend that's happening in America at the moment. It's actually, they go onto things like Netflix. Indie films go onto things like Netflix.
It was Sam Rockwell, by the way.
It was Sam Rockwell. There you go. Some indie films, like, as an example, one we reviewed on this show a while back, Monsters. Was actually made available to stream before its cinema release. It's to get, and then it comes off streaming. It's to get it exposure because they don't have the marketing dollars of the big screen films, the big studio films. So they go into streaming first. This is the indie cinema is playing all sorts of new games to try stuff. I think it's really good. So it'll go streaming, and I think it's a couple weeks later it goes up on the cinema. So, okay, it doesn't apply to us. Unfortunately, it doesn't apply to us.
Damn.
Okay, that's the news. Let's do a list of five. Let's have a look here. Our five... Let's start again. Our list of five this week. Five films best viewed under the influence. I feel like I'm under the influence. It's called caffeine.
Yep.
All right, five films best viewed under the influence. I have my list here. Unfortunately, because we're running so far behind, I haven't been able to go get exact dates and stuff. So we're just going to have to kind of muddle our way through this.
Yeah.
I'm going to start this time, and I'm going to say my number five, and the only reason it's here is because I always used to. Now, this is under the influence of alcohol, which is perfectly legal. We used to, my friends and I used to get together and have bourbon appreciation nights every Friday night. We'd get the latest videos out, and we would sit and drink a bottle of bourbon together and watch movies. And it was always great fun. And without fail, at the end of every single Friday, the last movie to go on before we all passed out was always Big Trouble in Little China. And it is so much fun when drunk, let me tell you. So I'm going to say Big Trouble in Little China, John Carpenter's film, under the influence of alcohol on a bourbon appreciation night, can't be beaten. That's my number five.
Well, it's my number five may be films you've already watched, but due to the title, and that's all I'll say, these are films that I think every person should watch. My number five on the list is Blade Runner. Blade Runner is the ultimate movie to watch under influence. There we go. Five.
Yeah, I can cope with that. Yep. I was about to bring up a Super, but it's I realized just, I haven't changed
look,
the Super.
I mean, it's one of those great collaborations of sound, visuals, and just concepts.
Yeah, and I think it's very important to note that aside from Big Trouble in Little China, which is basically about the humor while drunk, most of the films that both of us are going to pick are going to be films that are just their visual and oral sensations.
Absolutely.
And that's what you really are looking at when you're looking at films under the influence. Because you're just like, wow. You know, that's what it's really about.
Yep.
Blade Runner didn't make my list, interestingly enough, but I can really appreciate that.
Yep,
I can really appreciate
as that. As is mostly the... Mostly the way that these things go.
Now, I don't have the year here, and it's a really hard film to find. It's a film I used to watch on VHS. It's a film called Society, and it's directed by Brian Yuzna, who directed the sequels to Reanimator and so forth. It's a twisted, perverted, weird-ass film with lots of prosthetic makeup and truly needs to be seen completely wasted. Because if you watch it straight, you sit there and go, what the hell am I watching? When you watch it wasted, you go, far out, man. When the person sitting on the table is bent over with their ass in the air and the guy's head is popping out of his asshole.
Wow.
Yeah, you sit there and go, yeah, that's pretty far out, man. So Society is the name of the film. Came out in the late 80s. So if you can ever find a copy, it's trippy. Yep. All right, so have a look at that. Your number four.
My number four is a great film to watch in any state.
Wait, one correction. James from Melbourne, oral with an A.
Oral. Oral, not oral.
Not oral, oral with an A, like you listen.
Not like brushing your teeth or something like that. No, that's not what we're talking about. Okay, my number four is Hilarious, which is, even if you watch it, if you have been or have been drunk or whatever, Pineapple Express.
Oh, damn straight.
It's just one of those things where you go, yeah, that's totally what it's like.
Yeah. The problem is I watch Pineapple Express straight and you feel stoned.
Absolutely.
Oh, man, there's another film. I'll have to give an honor.
Oh, dude, no way. You did not put that as your number three film. I'm sorry.
Which one?
What?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. My number three film is Eraserhead. David Lynch's original black and white film. Now, let me explain this. Eraserhead is not a great film. It is a It's a first filmmaker film. But if you are stoned, this film's a trip.
I don't care.
When he sits down to eat, the little genetically engineered chickens start to move their legs. And you sit there going, what?
No, when that fucking baby's in the room, or when he's staring
or
at
the
that
dancer
stu-
with the with the cottage cheese things under her. What?
And then the freaking, like, where the heater starts making that loud noise, and I'm just like, what is the point in this? Stop!
And that's your problem. You weren't stoned enough, all right? Now, we at Geek actually do not encourage going out and getting stoned. But, I'm going to admit the fact that everybody has, at one stage or another, done this in their life, I'm sure.
Be shocked if you will.
Be shocked if you will, and I spent a great deal of my youth in a drug-induced haze, all right? So, I'm not now. I am clean, and I'm a grown-up with a child, and I'm married, you know? But I can remember back fondly to going to the cinema many times, looking at films going far out.
James from Melbourne said, I don't remember the 90s.
I don't remember the 80s. All right, so.
Anyway, moving right along. My number three is Reefer Madness, which is the best film. Look, I'm just saying, just in general, if you haven't seen this film, it's just hilarious to watch. This film is so stupid, it's just funny.
It's one of the funniest, next to Atomic Cafe. These are two of the funniest documentaries ever made, because they are so earnest, and yet what they're saying is so stupid.
It's like, it's people genuinely trying to make sure people don't do stupid things with their lives, with no idea or understanding of what it is that they're talking about. And Reefer Madness is hilarious. I will never forget the two guys getting high and shooting themselves in the face. And I was just sitting there going, who does that? Anyway, no one, apparently, by the way. So,
No, apparently not. Now, my number two is a Ken Russell film from the early 80s. And once again, it's a little bit of a hard one to dig up. But if you can find it, it stars William Hurt and Blair Brown.
Oh, dude,
and
no
it's
way.
Called Altered States. And basically, it is a film. Ken Russell is a trippy director at the best of times. But this was a film about a scientist who wants to, he's delving into hallucinogenic drugs, finding different hallucinogenic drugs, because he's convinced that the internal can externalize.
Yeah.
And so he basically goes to all these Indian tribes and drops mushrooms and all these sort of things, just basically trying to get the ultimate trip to see if it's a reality or if it is a trip. And in the meantime, the film is completely trippy. And when he starts to actually turn into a monkey in the shower, you start to go,
You know what? It's funny, though, because Altered States almost works as a reason to not do drugs.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's like, even if you were 100% straight, you would come out the end of that movie going, that's why I'm never going to touch drugs.
There's a scene in Altered States where he's dropped mushrooms with these native Indians, and he's sitting there, and there's a giant mushroom, and it takes off like a firecracker. He's sitting there going, what?
No,
it's pretty trippy. It's pretty out there. But yeah, and it must be watched under the influence of
Delta Knight, there is a different movie. It's not the movie musical. The movie musical was something someone else did because they thought it was funny enough to make a musical, because apparently everything that's funny in the world or influential needs a musical about it as well. This isn't the case. Just find the original movie,
50s, isn't it? Actually?
Is it? Okay, 1950s.
It's basically, it's a documentary made up of old educational films, and they've sliced them all up and re-edited them together, and it's very funny stuff. And it's the same if there's another documentary that was made in the early 80s called Atomic Cafe, where they took all those old propaganda 50s nuke films about, duck and cover and all, and they re-edited it all together, and it just becomes hysterically funny. Because you sit there and go, wow, we were deluded, you know? All right, so we're at the number one. And I
two.
Think my
no, my no, number two.
Your number two. Sorry, my number. Sorry, two. I was still tripping out from Altered States. So.
That's cool. My number two is the movie that everybody should watch because it is much more profound, which is Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. I will say no more. I will just say number two. Definitely.
It's a great film. It's a great film. I don't think I'd actually want to watch that under the influence, though, because there's so much going
it's
on.
It's much more profound. Look, people misunderstand that film. There is a lot of serious dialogue that is in that film that is brought up about the generation, about the time, about the states and things like this. And it's worthwhile to watch because it becomes a very poignant film.
Yeah. No, I think Fear and Loathing is a great film. Mm. It's terrific. My number one is also a poignant film. It's a film called Koyaanisqatsi. Koyaanisqatsi is the ultimate head trip film now, but it is actually a very serious documentary. It is an amazing film.
Beautiful. Amazing. Get it film on Blu-ray if you can.
A lot of people have copied it. A lot of people have tried to emulate it. Baraka was one that came after it. Koyaanisqatsi itself has had two sequels that have come, Powakatsi and Nakukwatsi. And the words are Hopi Indian. And basically, the film is based on a set of prophecies from the Hopi Indians, which are now extinct. And the way that Godfrey Reggio structured Koyaanisqatsi, which took him 10 years to shoot, it is just music by Philip Glass, married to images that Godfrey Reggio went out and shot over the course of 10 years. Lots of time-lapse photography and stuff like that. And basically, he doesn't tell you what the three prophecies are that he's talking about until the end of the film. So he just assaults you for an hour and a half with images to music and then comes up with these prophecies at the end and you go, oh dear. And it is an amazing, amazing experience. However, under the influence, it takes on a whole new meaning, all right? And I will give you one example. I actually sat and watched it on VHS. I saw it at the cinema a couple of times, and it is fantastic. And we made sure we got right ripped before we went to see it, too. But we actually got a copy on VHS in the day, and we went over to a friend's house, and we got ourselves heavily under the influence. And I just remember, to give you an idea, there is a sequence in Koyaanisqatsi where he uses time-lapse photography through the city. So all the roads and machinery and everything else going on. And this pumping Philip Glass music just powering the scene. And it's getting faster and faster and faster. And it goes on for like 15 minutes. And it just gets faster and faster and faster. And then suddenly it just stops. And there's this high shot of New York, like from a just looking straight down. And it's just absolutely silent.
Yeah.
And our friend, who we were at his house, just looks around at us and goes, I was there, man.
Oh, it's terrible.
Is, but it is an amazing film, and it is the ultimate head trip, which you can watch straight, stoned, drunk. It makes no difference.
Honestly, like,
and you will get something different out of it every time you watch it.
Even if it wasn't your kind of thing,
Koyaanisqatsi.
Yeah, sorry. Is just an absolute must watch for anyone because, look, as a film on its own, besides all of this, it really deserves a watch. It's just a huge experience to sit down and really go through because you all three need watching. I actually think each one is
each
almost
one is
as good.
Good. They all have a different message to say. I think they go down in quality. Koyaanisqatsi is definitely the powerhouse. It took 10 years to make. There's a lot of love involved. Mm. Powakatsi, the second one, is visually amazing. But it didn't take as long to put together. He had, funnily enough, financed by Golan and Globus, the Canon Group, which is a really unusual thing for them to finance, but they financed it, and Reggio still delivered a very powerful film. Nakukatsi didn't quite have the impact for me. That's the one about war, and that just didn't quite have the same impact for me. But the first two are definite must-watches.
Absolutely.
Definite must-watches. Cool. Koyaanisqatsi, though, is the must-watch. If you are a lover of photography in particular, the stuff that he shoots, the shots that he gets are remarkable. And the juxtaposition of those shots, there's a sequence in the film which shows in time lapse, so it's all really fast. It shows the escalators at a New York subway. So it's really long subway and it's packed with people. And so it's just this whole rows of people going up these escalators and it's suddenly intercut with a sausage factory and the sausage is running down the conveyor belt. And it's like you sit there and going, oh, that's just far out. And it goes through this whole period of these empty apartment buildings, tract housing, I mean, like the projects, and these huge commission flat buildings, and they're all empty. And as the camera is going past all these buildings, you can see clean through to the other side, at the through the windows, because all these buildings are empty. And then you see demolition of these buildings being brought down, beautifully shot. And then suddenly he juxtapositions those shots with all these homeless people living on the street and stuff like that. And you sit there and go, Jesus Christ, what's wrong? And it's all the term Koyaanisqatsi means life out of balance. And it's all about how on one hand we're doing this, on the other hand we're doing this, and we are fucked, you know? It's like, get a grip, people, you know?
Yeah.
No, it's an amazing film. What is your number one? We got all serious there for a minute.
Yeah. My number one film is Scanner Darkly.
Good choice.
I have been watching this film over and over again, and I don't know why. It's become one of these films that I've really taken on board as a cult classic and something that I hold very dearly, because it's a story, as someone that didn't for a very long time, to look around, I had a lot of friends that were very under the influence. And it's a great movie either way, just to kind of really look at sort of the lifestyle and structure and the paranoia and all this sort of stuff of the culture. But it's one of those films that, because it's shot the way it was, and because of its message, and because its acting talent is just so strong, it takes five or six viewings and can also be helped by certain things. But it's one of those films where just sit down and watch it one time and just think, what it's trying to say. More than anything, because I think it really deserves its spot for that alone.
Yeah, no, it is a really good film and highly recommend. Now, there's a couple of films I actually forgot
about. And Big Lebowski almost made my list. It was right there on number five, and I would have almost chucked it on, but I was trying to balance serious with funny. And
Iron Ass Face says Videodrome is another one that could go on this list easily. Now, there's a couple here that one of them actually kind of bounced in and out of the list a couple of times while I was putting this together, which, of course, is 2001 A Space Odyssey, which just for the last 15-20 minutes of that film is a head trip in itself. And there's a lot of people in the late 60s, early 70s, it was the go-to film for stoners. They would go and go, far out, man, Kubrick's talking to me, right? So that's one. But there is another film that I only just thought of while we were on the show, and you heard me before go, I should have put that. There's a film from Neil Jordan. It was made in the 80s. It's actually one of his very first films. Neil Jordan is a man who went off to do The Crying Game and Interview with a Vampire. It may have actually been his first film, or if not his first film, one of his really early films, called The Company of Wolves. And it is a retelling of Little Red Riding Hood, but with werewolves and stuff like that.
Wow.
And the film is really dreamy and really kind of surreal in the way it's made. And the reason why I thought this film would be really good under influence is because we actually saw a friend and I, who were both at the time quite heavy stoners, actually went to see it straight. And we actually walked out of the cinema, looked at each other, and went, we feel stoned. Because the film kind of just puts you into this dreamy head state. Really good film if you ever get a chance. Bizarre. And it's,
what was the title again?
The Company of Wolves.
The Company of Wolves.
And it's got some interesting, I mean, it's kind of low budget. And it's one of those films where, you know the kind of film I'm talking about, where Neil Jordan, his camera never sits still.
Yep.
It's always drifting. Yeah. So no matter where you are in a scene, the camera is always slightly moving. It's always, so there's this kind of dreamlike feel to this camera always moving in some way. Great stuff. Really clever film. Anyway, that's our list. And yes, as I said before, we don't encourage you to go out and do it, but you know,
if it happens, maybe these should be the films.
If it happens, rather than going out and causing trouble, you can stay home and watch a head trip film.
Absolutely.
So there you go. There's one way of thinking about it. All right. We're going to get ourselves out of here. We're going to finish up. We got a little bit of housekeeping very quickly. We're going to get through this housekeeping, and we're going to say if you agree or disagree with us, want to send something to us. Oh no! Wait. Breaking news. I just have to bring up my...
So breaking, I don't even know about it.
No, he doesn't know about it. It's not in the show notes. I literally just got this email very late in the day. It's from our very good friend, Geek Betty. And I just got to throw this in. Stanley Kubrick's first feature-length film called Fear and Desire is as rare as hen's teeth. Yeah. Okay? It isn't available on DVD. It wasn't even available on VHS. But for a very short period of time, Google Video has it up. So if you want to, we're going to put the link in the show notes, and you can go over. I'm going to watch this tonight. You can go and watch his first feature-length film for free on Google Video. Fear and Desire is what it's called. It's only available until April 29th.
Yeah.
And then it's coming down.
Is that the one that's currently on the Google main page?
Yeah, probably. It might be.
No, that's Charlie
Chaplin.
That's Chaplin.
Okay. No, this is on Google Video, which is funny because I didn't even know Google Video was still up. So we have the link. We're going to put that through on the show notes with this film. In fact, I'll see if I can find it right now for our live listeners.
Subterranean Cinema, is that it? This video will be removed on April 29th.
That would be it. It's called Fear and Desire.
Yep.
And Josh has started watching it already.
Good God, do not watch this film full screen. It's unreadable.
No, it's very poor quality. It's a lost film. You'll be watching it for historical purposes only. Okay?
Lord, I don't think I can even watch that.
All right. You can't watch it on iPads, by the way. It's Flash, so it doesn't load. I tried. Okay. Back to our regularly scheduled program here. Sorry, I just had to remember to throw that in before I forgot. So thank you very much, Geek Betty, for bringing that to my attention. And as I say, the quality is not good, but this is a lost film. So it is just a historical document. I'm a huge Kubrick fan. It's always interesting to see everything that he's done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, with that out of the way, agree or disagree, or want to send us a little juicy tidbit like that, all right? Sorry?
We like tidbits like that.
Send it to feedback at geekactually.com. Remember in the subject line to put it is for Film Actually or Geek Actually, depending on which show you're listening to. Or you can drop us a voicemail, 02-801-13167. I will put those details on screen right now for our live listeners. You can get merchandise, join our fan page, follow us on Twitter, read our Tumblr pages, anything you want to do or find us in any way, just go to geekactually.com, click the follow us link. You'll find all that information. And remember, don't forget our other show, Geek Actually, which goes out on the Geek Actually feed on iTunes. Just search for Geek Actually, or you can find it on geekactually.com. We do record both our shows live on Saturday. We begin our recording day around the 12 p.m. mark on Saturday, Australian Eastern Standard Time, UTC plus 10, geekactually.com/live. Mm-hmm. And we have some friends that we always like to shout out to. WeekendRonan.com is the home of the real junkies, R-E-E-L. You can find them on iTunes by searching for them or go to WeekendRonan.com. They are another movie podcast. They drink tequila. They're cool guys. Go have a listen to them. Yep. Rachel over at the Funky Film Show, Thursdays on Radio Fremantle 107.9 FM, or you can listen to the episode later at RadioFremantle.com. They are our good friends. Go check them out as well. Josh, I believe you have something?
RawDLC.com. Oh, God, things are starting up and firing in the background. RawDLC.com is a gaming website. Go over and check it out. It has a whole bunch of new content coming up as of next week. So basically when this podcast is launched, we have all sorts of cool things coming up. We also have the live show kicking off again this week, 8 p.m. on Tuesday. So make sure you check that stuff out. Other than that, we have a fan page currently for both Geek Actually and now DLC Live, DLC/live. Go over, check it out. That's all.
Fantastic. And just as a quick shout out, we are trying to raise some money. The Little Geek, who comes on this show every now and again, and we'll actually have a Little Geek segment next week because there's a big... Next week, remember, we are reviewing Thor. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be a big week, a big geek week, and Little Geek will also want to get his two bits in, so we'll probably have that at the end of the show. Little Geek has a birthday coming up in June. We are trying to raise the money to get him his own iPad so that he can do video
editing. Doing great so far.
Doing great so far. Thanks to all those who have contributed. It's right on the front page of geekactually.com. If you would like to help try and get Little Geek an iPad for his birthday, you can help by throwing in $5 even. It's fine. Mm. You know, whatever.
We've had a couple of $5 donations. Absolutely. And thank you just as much as everyone else.
Everything goes. And anybody who donates will go on to the birthday card for him. And he'll even bring it on the show and show us how he's got a nice new iPad and we have old ones.
Yes, and we will get him to make something to bring onto the show to show you how positive his use of it has been.
Absolutely. All right, we're going to get ourselves out of here. Oh, no, wait, one more thing. Our cartoonist, Josh Spencer, if you like the artwork on our cover art for our shows, go check his other artwork out at attackninja.blogspot.com. Yes. That's it. Now we're finished. We are going to go and finish the show today by playing The Cantina Band, which is a track from the Paul soundtrack. Mm-hmm. It is by Sid Masters and the Swing Riders, and it is just great. And it's so geeky. So for our really super geeky nerds out there, you will recognize this tune immediately. For those who are not so geeky, where have you been? So this is I'm trying to find our end credits here. There we are. All right, so this is the Cantina Band. We're going to get ourselves out of here. Josh, thank you very much for joining us.
Chat room, pleasure.
Thank you very much for joining us. Listeners out there, thank you very much for listening. Go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies, and we'll see you all next week.
See you guys.
You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.